kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I did not die between Thursday or Saturday or whatever day it was we fucking recorded. And today, I'm here, but also I have a headache, so I feel dead, so I'm probably not going to talk much. So I might as well not be here.
That's okay. Chris and Purnell are here, too. How are you guys doing?
I'm feeling tired, but not dead, thankfully. I'm sorry you guys are feeling sick, though. That's for damn sure.
I feel great.
Show off.
Damn, I'm trying to be sympathetic.
Why don't you just try to go ahead and say that your bank account's healthy, too. I had to knock you down a peg. I'm sorry.
Did everybody get their stimulus check yet?
No. Nope. You know, I had three different direct deposit information with the IRS. I went in and specifically put the one I wanted them to deposit it to. And the motherfuckers turned around and said, okay, well, we'll mail you a check on the 24th.
Nice.
What the fuck?
What's bugging me is I don't even know what my situation is because I haven't seen anything in regards to it. Whenever I go to that stupid website, it's like, we don't have enough information for you. But I'm like, at the same time, I file through Tax Act. Mm-hmm. They have my information. Like, that's definitely not an issue there. But even if there was, like, a case where they didn't, there's no phone number to call to say, hey, guys, everything should be in order. How do you not have my info? And I don't know if it's just if there's a complication, if I'm not supposedly going to get one, or if I got to wait for Trump to sign the stupid check. I don't freaking know, because it's all annoying to me.
Him having his signature on the check is such a dickhead move, too.
After I scan the check and get it cashed through my mobile app, I'm going to put it down on the ground and let the dog poop on it.
That's right.
Right on his name. To make you feel better.
Chris, what were you saying?
I was just going to say he's insisting on signing all the checks and in the middle of a crayon shortage.
Okay, that was great. I did not expect that.
But yeah, I like that. I approve. That was a good one.
It was
worth the wait.
Thank you, sir. Always the man bringing that levity.
Chris, did you get your stimulus check yet or no?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you waste it on?
Oh, bills.
Bah.
The marijuanas.
Yeah.
You had the best 420 out of all of us.
I was waiting for you to say some kind of Switch Collector Edition.
I wish. I'm still waiting for GameStop to open up so I can get my Final Fantasy VII.
Man.
I'm still, like, no way around that for them to be like, you know, we want our money badly enough that we're going to come up with a way to, like, have it shipped to you, because I'm sure a lot of people aren't even waiting. They're just like, screw it. I'm going to get it and get it from somewhere else, or just forego the collectors to play the game proper.
Like, yeah. That's the thing, though. Yeah, it's like, you know, I put down my money on it, and we have a coupon for it as well, so we'll get it a little bit cheaper. But, like, yeah, I got a special edition, so I can't just go to, like, Amazon and get it now, because, you know.
No one has it.
Yeah, because that's what happened with me. Like, I didn't get it from GameStop, mind you, but I got it from Amazon at the time. They were talking about it being delayed like 2 weeks or something. And people were like, you can just get it from GameStop. I'm like, or Best Buy. I was like, no, because I had a coupon that made $25 on it. So I'm not going to say no to that.
I had a coupon.
But in the end, it still ended up coming on the release day, despite the thing telling me it was going to show up for much longer than that. So I took the gift horse where I could get it, so to speak. What a gift horse. But in the end, the funny part, I still haven't played the damn thing yet. So in that regard, I'm still in the same boat as you. I was playing La Mulan instead. Finally beat that damn game.
That is not Ori.
Don't matter. I'll play this. You play La Mulan, and I'll make Ori a priority.
I don't have a problem with Lana, though.
We were both trying to make a pun out of it at the same time.
Priority. I don't know whether to applaud y'all or tell you to fuck off.
Well, we're talking about your game now, so.
I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, they worked hard for that pun. You should congratulate them.
Yeah, but they both came up with it at the same time.
That makes it synchronized punning. That's an Olympic sport.
No, because great minds think alike, but greater minds think for themselves. I needed two different puns to give out a gold here.
I never claimed I was a great mind. Not Finn, once did I claim that.
Well, you haven't played it yet? Pretty hot Oriful.
I'm hanging up now. Goodbye.
Hey, you asked for the pun.
That one was bad.
It was a spectacular pun. It was a pun that dads around the world will be proud of.
That was a Carnage level forced pun. And that is like the worst of the worst.
Dad worthy.
Oh, dad. Carnage.
Keep popping. Like Kellogg's.
Speaking of Carnage, he and I are having yet another joint giveaway on Twitter. So if you're not paying attention to either the SML Twitter account or Carnage's Twitter account, you should keep your eyes open because we've got two contests going right now. Two of them. One for what the hell's the one for? Is it Cryo Gear? Possibly? I don't even know. I'm so asleep.
Game of... Yeah, no, wait, that's not it. This
cryo
is
gear,
else.
Yeah. We're giving away cryo gear, which we'll be reviewing in just a couple of minutes. We're giving away 8 copies of cryo gear.
8?
8. Damn. Yeah.
Moogly.
So get on that. And then we also have a Raw Fury game package, thanks to our friends at Raw Fury. Stay safe, stay home, game on. You could win 3 games.
Get raw.
Yeah, good stuff.
I said, stay home, get raw.
No, it's too late now. It's already too late. You should have been here earlier, Purnell. God damn it.
We could have gotten raw, man. We could have got raw.
Speaking of getting raw, my throat is getting raw. I don't want to talk all night, so we're just diving into reviews now. Sound good?
Oakley diggly.
God damn right it sounds good, because I'm in charge of the show.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Joe. You're not in charge. Never mind. I don't want to be in charge. Let Joe do it.
God damn right, Cole.
I take it back.
You're not in charge, Joe? Okay, then you're in charge, Cole. Oh, shit. What did I do?
Soon as I said it, I realized the mistake I had made. And I've made a horrible mistake.
Retrotract. You might be wondering how I found myself in this position.
I am the queen of questionable decision making.
All right. Well, first game to talk about tonight is called Quest Hunter, developed and published by 2Zombie Games, released April 24th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $19.99. Quest Hunter is an isometric action RPG where your choices drive the story. Find tons of treasures and secrets, solve puzzles, equip your character, level up your skills, and finish off enemy bosses. Play on the couch alone or with friends, or make it an online party for up to 4 players. Purnell, tell us about Quest Hunter.
All right, so Quest Hunter, how to describe this game? It is awesome. Essentially, it is a game where, as you described, you are pretty much, it's like a top-down Diablo exploration-esque game. So the game starts out with you kind of customizing a little avatar character by choosing like his clothing, his headgear, and I guess his eye gear. And at that point, it kind of throws you into a story where you are flying, the sun disappears, and you crash into a location. And at this point, you are tasked with, I don't know, getting home, like getting your ship repaired, and eventually bringing the sun back, because apparently the sun actually was stolen, not disappeared. So what ends up happening as you run around the game, you have a few buttons at your disposal. You can attack with a basic melee attack. You have a shield button, which is the right trigger. And the way shields work in this game is depending on the strength of the shield and your actual shielding stat, your character can block a certain amount of shield of damage. So, say, for example, your shield block damage is like 10. That means that when you block and an enemy attacks you, if they do 10 damage, the shield will absorb all of it and you won't take any damage. However, in the event that it goes beyond that, you'll receive chip damage from blocking. You have a normal attack button, like I mentioned before, and as you level up, you'll also gain access to a rudimentary skill tree. It's not too complicated, very small, but we're talking maybe 10 skills, and as you level those up, you unlock them by, one, being at the high enough level to get them, and then additionally, you can unlock them by paying the required number of types of gems, so diamonds, various elemental crystals, which you can usually find from plundering the world map or the map. You use those along with having the level requirements to unlock the skills, which then can be quick access to your X, Y, and B buttons, at which point you can then press the button to unleash the skill and then allow it to cool down and then eventually use it again and again and again. Now, traversal of the said map is done through a series of maps connected by or a series of nodes connected on a world map. So start out the crash site. You can run around there, attack enemies with your melee attack, and there's also like various landmarks like rocks and trees, let's go with that, because those are the main things you end up destroying anyway. But basically, you can smash a variety of different objects on the world map, and when you break them, they generate resources. Those resources are then utilized at various merchants to when you go to buy items. Like, they say crafting, but it's not really crafting in this game so much as it is you go to a store. The guy says, do you want this item? You go, yes. And he's like, okay, it's going to cost you 50 gold and also 4 tree trunks or 4 wood and 2 stone. And if you have those, you can buy the item. So you're not really like doing crafting in the traditional sense in the RPG where you're like at a smither or you're doing it from your own inventory. It's just a part of the shop mechanic in the game. But you're amassing a bunch of materials with the intent being to craft things. Now, when you're on a zone area in the game, you are looking typically for NPCs to talk to who will usually give you quests or help you out in the ways of, like I said, various merchants and the like, or you're looking for one of few exits, one being an exit that leads you back to the world map, which, again, is where all the node connecting exists at, or there are, like, little mini dungeons that sometimes exist in the maps themselves. And when you enter those, they kind of lead you to, like, a little small dungeon environment, sometimes small, sometimes a little larger, where the goal is just to delve in, destroy things, kill monsters, and find treasure chests, whether out in the open or in secret. Sometimes you have to dig them up by pressing the R bumper as well. Sometimes treasure just underground or whatever. But essentially, when you do this, you go in, grab the stuff, and then get back out. Sometimes there's quests related to those dungeons, too, but for the most part, it's mostly just going in and doing something there. Just another place to beat the crap out of stuff. At its core, this honestly sounds like a pretty sweet deal because, I mean, it gets all the basics, right? You know, you're exploring the world, you're going from place to place, taking quests, doing things, getting better equipment. But there are a few things that annoy me about the game that don't make it unplayable, but they do make it an annoyance in the sense where I should be warning people before they come in. First and foremost is the attacking in general. I can't speak for everybody, but typically when I play an action RPG, I want fast, fluid movement. I want to be able to get in, get out with my enemies, and I want my attack to feel like I actually have some, let's say, range to it. Like, I don't have to feel like I'm in harm's way just to do damage. Unfortunately, this game lacks in both of those things. You can walk. The walking is not very fast-paced. There's no evasion maneuvers available in the game, and it's just not paced. You'll find yourself getting hit just walking past enemies more than you would like, simply because you just don't have the momentum to evade things. In addition, your attack range is so small that you'd better be utilizing the shield function, because quite frankly, you are going to likely take hits just from trying to hurt guys. Like, I'm just fighting a golem, boom, just whack me in the head. I was trying to walk past him. He's like, nope, get back here. Knock the crap out of him. But for
those
the most
dudes
part,
hit hard, too.
They really freaking do, and I hate them for it. They're a bunch of stony bastards. The skills do help in that regard, admittedly, as skills should. But again, if you're trying to fight multiple guys and you're trying to actually make progress, you don't want to have to make your primary means of attack be the thing you have to wait to charge up. Usually special attacks are meant to be that thing to do the extra oomph in a battle, not be the battle. So that's something that kind of irked me in that regard. Is this a game that I would outright say is a terrible game? Not even close. I play terrible games. This is not one of those games. Would I call it a must-have game? I also would not do that because, I mean, this doesn't help that the genre that this is in is a fairly common one. So it's not as though I'm hurting for this product. Would I play this with my friends, though, on the couch if I had access to people during a quarantine? The answer is yes, I would. I would play this with friends because I feel as though having multiple people banging out at the same time in the game would result in a number of the issues I'm having at least being slightly mitigated. Yeah, I can have a short attack range, but if there's three guys hammering on the same golem, we'll probably muck it up quickly enough that it won't even be a bother to me. In addition to that, you can resurrect your teammates too if they're dead, according to the tips in the game anyway. I was playing alone, so I don't know firsthand. So that would be another thing that would mitigate issues. And as far as the game's questing goes, there's so many freaking quests. There's constantly something being asked of you to do. You're always getting something new, and you're constantly having to move about and take care of business, whether going to new camps, rescuing princesses, chasing jerkbag NPCs around and killing them, or doing follow-up quests for said NPCs. The one other thing worth mentioning also is that the dialogue, it's not going to really, I wouldn't call it fetching. It's just there to move you along. So you'll talk to a guy, he'll say something, you're just like, you know, just give me the stuff. They'll give you choices, but the choices don't really matter. Well, except for one, because there are a few cases where you might get a guy that says, hey, here's a thing. And you might say, oh, I don't want the thing. Do I have to take it? Like, no. I was like, okay, good. As a result, I'll just give you this instead. I've had to come across that a few times, but for the most part, there's just a lot of like just dialogue where I'm like, I don't really care about any of this. I just want, give me the quest and let me move on to my next mission or whatever. So just want to throw it out there in general. But overall, like, what is the cost of the game itself?
$19.99.
Okay. $19.99, I would say it is more of a try if you have friends with which to play it with you. If you're playing it by yourself and you're determined to try this game out, I would make it a try it on sale. Not a deny, but definitely not a go out and grab this today. What about you? Because I think you said you played a bit of it too, right? What were your thoughts on it?
I fucking love this game, man.
Tell me more.
Like, I can understand the gripes you have. The golems are absolute dicks in this game. I do wish you could move faster. There were times I wish I had a dodge move or just like a roll ability or something to just speed things up when you're trying to go through areas you've already been through. It's really something about the game. Just, I couldn't stop playing. I wanted to do another quest. Just something about this game clicked with me, and it has its issues. It has its problems. I can agree that it's not a deny it. I personally would give it a very recommended try it. I wish the price was a little bit lower. I think $15 would have been a perfect price for this one. But the fact that it has online play is a big positive right there. I think me and you need to play online together and see if we could change your mind and see if we could get you to like it a bit more. But I really enjoyed my time with it.
I can get down with that suggestion. I would do that with you for sure. Like, and I will say, I think prior to that comes to mind, you're like, you don't know what drew you. And I could bet that the music in the game, it has like a sort of a loop to it where it's like, it's not, the music isn't primarily area focused. It's more like kind of like a cycle of tracks, but it's good cycles of tracks and they're kind of relaxing. Honestly, even the dungeon tracks are relaxing to me. That definitely would help, I'd say. In addition to that, just the way quests even pop up, like, would you say probably just the fact that there's always something that you're supposed to be doing? Kind of a helper in that regard too. It's like, well, I could stop, but there's three more things on my checklist. I want to get these knocked off. And when you go to check those off, I was like, nope, got two more on the way. Those two. So
that's the kind of game mechanic that just keeps you coming back because there's always something new to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that in games. I will say, I wish finding treasure was a little bit easier.
Oh yeah, did you have the issue where you would look for you would see sparkles, thinking that was the indicator there was a treasure chest? But sometimes the sparkles are just aesthetic; it's not an indicator there's treasure there.
Threw me off plenty of times.
Oh yeah,
sons of bitches.
But I don't mind getting free treasure when encounters happen on the friggin' map. It's like, hey, we're going to mug you. Like, nah, I'm just going to steal all your crap. Yeah, sometimes when you're going between nodes, you'll get mugged You had to fight the muggers and take their whatever they had on them. So,
but all right, and overall, try it. It works for me. I liked it a bit more than you did, apparently, but I still think you and I need to team up and play together.
I would do that.
So clear your goddamn schedule for me, Pernell.
I'm going to have to. I don't think we actually even got to play anything online together. We should do that.
We should. Damn it, we should. All right, next game to talk about is called Legend of Amberland, The Forgotten Crown, developed by Silver Lemur Games, published by Pineapple Works, released April 20th on the Switch for $19.99. Embark on an epic fantasy fairy tale adventure in Amberland, a place full of mythical creatures with your party of noble heroes ready to do heroic quests and fight the forces of evil. Chris, that sounds kind of cliche. Is it a good game?
I mean, I specifically asked for it, so these are all things that I wanted. All right, I got to get this out of the way right at the beginning. Do you remember like that meme? It's about 15 or 16 years old. The Amber Lamps meme.
No.
Somebody called the Amber Lamps.
Oh yeah,
because somebody mispronounced, you know, ambulance. And, you know, it was a huge thing on the internet. I cannot load this game up without thinking about that. Some all like Legend of Amber Lamps, Legend of Amber.
just find the meme for me. I haven't seen it in a long time, so find it for me.
Yeah, I'll have to find it for you. It's like old. It's like pre-YouTube internet, I think.
Oh, that hurts my back.
I felt my hairline recede a little more. Okay. So, Legend of Amberland is a throwback. I need to turn up my mic a little bit. It is a throwback dungeon crawling pseudo 3D RPG, the likes of which I've really not seen in this way. So, it basically, well, for one, you put together your party. It is. Interestingly, like, okay, so it's in the, like, wizardry and might and magic, like, you know, the classics of, you know, dungeon crawling, first person, and you put together your team of warriors. Interestingly, this game has you choose seven warriors, so your team is seven large, and we were trying to figure out, like, what other game has that many team members. Like, I think the closest is Might and Magic 3, I think, has six characters. But yeah, while I was streaming this, everybody was like, why do you get seven characters?
Why not?
Why not, indeed.
Yeah, I want seven characters.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, like, basically, it has a character creator that you can utilize, and you make your seven characters, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, basically, once you start off, you are basically thrust into this 3D world out on the world map, where you move one block at a time, and conveniently, there is a map representing, you know, the top-down view on your upper right all the time. And you do things like you go into dungeons, you go into towns, you know, the town is just a menu where you buy gear and rest up at the inn and all this other stuff. You go into castles where you get your quests and stuff like that, and then you go out to caves and, you know, fortresses and whatnot. And the whole thing is basically free exploration. You can do things in whatever order you like. You know, anything like that. You know, you can cross a bridge early on if you can defeat the troll that is at the bridge, but the troll is way more powerful than your level one party, so the better thing to do is to go and get a ship and sail around the bridge and go to the other side, and then you can, you know, start your quest and then go back and kick that troll's ass later. But yeah, like, it's an open-ended adventure. The graphical presentation is actually really interesting because it's very smooth, but also very pixelated. You know, it's very much a 3D plane upon which, you know, there's sprite textures, and then, like, trees are just like paper cutouts, you know, and buildings are paper cutouts. Like, you know, they're all like completely flat. And as enemies approach, and they will, as soon as you bump into them, you start the battle. And this is where the game actually gets pretty, pretty interesting. Like, when you take its forebears into consideration. So a game like, it's very much like Might and Magic in that, you know, when you push the A button, your character attacks and then it moves on to the next character, and everybody it feels like it's going in real time, but it actually is turn-based. Like, a character won't act until you, you know, push the right button. And there's this big old menu that, like, shows everything that you can do, like, everything down to changing your equipment, and fighting and using spells and all this other stuff. Now, you could use, like, you know, because the original way you would play this is, like, either through hotkeys or through, through, like, you know, clicking with a mouse. And the cool thing about this being a Switch game is that you actually can just, like, tap on the options with the touchscreen.
Nice.
And, yeah. But, you know, given that the other way is doing hotkeys, it actually has a really cool thing where you basically hold down the ZR button, and it will show you all of the options, and it'll lay over what combination of buttons does what. So, like, opening your spell book is holding ZL and pushing X, which seems like a lot of trouble, but considering you have so many options, like, you pretty much get them memorized right away, and so you're able to, like, actually hang with this whole thing, which is really cool, because prior attempts to, you know, consoleize this very much PC genre have always, you know, been very difficult. Usually it would involve using the D-pad to move a mouse cursor around, which is terrible. Yeah. So I really appreciate that this game makes a great effort to, like, make this stuff really zippy and intuitive. A huge challenge for this genre again. And so, yeah, then it comes down to like your actual characters. So you have, it has the usual D&D thing. You know, you got humans, elves, and dwarves. For some reason, you cannot select a dwarf female. You can choose human male and female and elf male and female, but I guess they just were like, we don't know how to draw a dwarf female, so we just blanked it out. I know.
We don't know how to do that.
But it's black.
How do you put boobs on a short person? We don't understand.
I know. Well, like, I don't know. Like, and it looks like it's not that it's not there at all. It's that it's there, but it's grayed out, that so you can't select it. So I'm like, is there some way to unlock it? The one thing you can unlock in this game is dwarf females.
Dwarven nipples.
But I don't know. Either way, so you select your, you know, obviously there's no difference between men and women for stats
dwarf
or anything
females,
like that.
Dwarf females, they just have more body hair. Thanks, Stark Mika.
Yeah.
And bigger beards.
Yeah, yeah. And, but, you know, there's no difference between genders. There's only differences between races. So humans have, like, an overall thing. You know, they're very generic, as it were. Elves have a few healing spells that they start out with, and they gain experience a little less, or, you know, some of their stats are a little lower. And, you know, but they make for really good wizards and healers and stuff. The classes are basically three different fighter types, just one kind of wizard and one kind of healer, and then two different kinds of bards, which is interesting. So, of course, I had to make two different bards. One's a bard and one's a troubadour, and I'm, like, fairly advanced in the game now, and I still can't tell the difference between them. Like, I still don't know. But you know, like I said, the way you line it up is that basically your strong people go in the middle of your setup, and then your magic users and bards, various bards and troubadours, go towards the outside. And, you know, enemies will target the main three people, like, first. So it's like an arrow formation, as it were. And, like I said, yeah, the game, like, is actually super forgiving if you have it on easy mode, because these games are known for being brutally hard. And, you know, this one can be. But it actually is really, really good about not overwhelming your party early on. Like, you're actually given chances to, like, you know, really grow with the enemies that are outside the world map. And the interesting thing is here is that once you defeat an enemy, they're gone permanently. So you can't just sit and grind in the same spot forever. You actually do have to explore and move outward and, like, you know, start doing things. You know, otherwise there's nothing to do because there's no enemies anymore. But, I mean, enemies go from having 30 hit points to 600 hit points before you even leave the first island. So there's lots of opportunity to grow. And, you know, it's things like, it's very, like I said, typical dungeon crawler stuff. It's that, you know, stores are stocked with special items that are way too expensive for you until you're right at the, you know, until you're already doing really well. you know, any character can equip anything, but then there's a huge weight requirement for, like, you know, plate armor, you know, weighs 20 units and leather armor weighs 2 units, and your character might only have 9 units they can hold, you know? So, yeah, you know, it's like different things like that, you know, building the engine and getting the party going. The actual quests are interesting. Like, there is an overall quest that you're kind of completing the smaller quests to get to. There's lots of, like, just random stuff that you can just run into and see if there's some enemies and, you know, see if there's anything you kind of missed. Or, like I said, you can just kind of go as fast as you can and just get strong enough to beat up the bad guys. But honestly, like, I don't think I've ever seen a old school style of Wizardry or Bard's Tale or, you know, whatever kind of game that's this, like, intuitive and easy to learn for people who are unfamiliar with the genre. So I was actually very impressed with what kind of care and, you know, how much care and effort went into this thing. So, yeah, I haven't been able to put it down. I've been playing this thing I've had it for a while, so I've been playing it quite a lot.
You're playing it now, aren't you?
I'm looking at it right now. I'm walking around an empty area.
I do have a fairly Pernell-based type question for you, if that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I'm a fan of Wizardry games, too, but I noticed in a lot of the newer ones that were coming out by the company I took over, they were making all the dungeon exploration fairly mute. Like, there was no music or sound when you explored environments. Does the dungeon exploration have music in this game, or is it still quiet?
Soundtrack is good. It's a little mellow, I will admit, and it does have, like, the same kind of dungeon themes depending on the type of dungeon, but no, it never leaves you in silence. It has RPG appropriate music.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, and it doesn't try to be 8-bit or anything like that. It's kind of synthy. Sounds like a really good 90s PC sound card, basically.
Nice. Yeah. So overall, $20. What do you think?
I would have absolutely bought this if I didn't get it to review. So yes, I'd say this is a buy it for Dungeon Crawler fans who are used to this kind of game. I would say it's also a buy it for people who are just curious about the genre and want to get into it with something that's not going to, like, murder them within 3 steps, like Wizardry. but at least the old Wizardries will. And, like, the only recent thing I can compare it to, and this is still, like, 10 or 15 years old, is Dark Spire. And it's more forgiving than Dark Spire. Oh, and the other thing about it that I made sure to check, when you make your characters, you don't roll the characters. They're always the same for stats. So it's very easy to get in. You can actually just choose a default party that is already well-balanced. Everybody's named. Everybody's portraits are chosen. By the way, portraits are the same pool for all characters, regardless of... The only difference, I think, is that they're male and female portraits, and then you just choose from a list. So you can make your... you know, wizard look like a dwarf if you want, or your, you know, elven wizard look like a dwarf, or, you know, your dwarven wizard look like an elf, whatever you want. By the way, do you want to hear about my party? Because they give you plenty of letters to work with. As I understand, they give you 500 letters to work with, but I somehow think that's not true. I didn't test it.
500 for a name?
When it went to the Switch input field, it was like 0/500.
Wow.
So I might have to, like, try and write a paragraph or something as a character's name just to see if
what's your party? We got to hear what the party is.
Okay, so we're going from inside to out. So my leader is a night human named Flint Mancave.
Yes!
He is flanked on both sides by the male dwarf warrior, Rowdy Randolph, and the... the female human champion, Tilda Dunkaroos.
Yes, which is Tilda Dunkaroos.
Can I
get
classic
on your level for naming characters, please? I am terrible by comparison.
Oh, I could give you a list to start with. I have a master list I draw from usually.
Dunkaroos.
Tilda Dunkaroos.
That is incredible dedication to have a master list.
That is master class character naming. Master class.
Funny enough, I've been using Tilda Dunkaroos as a character name since the Sega Genesis AD&D Warriors of the Eternal Sun, because it allows for 20 characters. But that was still like only like 5 years ago. She's about 5 or 6 years old as far as like me using the name. Anyways, so then we have our magic users, both elven female. We have our wizard, Destiny Hack Temple, and our elven healer, Alberta Special Sauce.
Jesus.
Then on the far flanks, we have our human male troubadour named Ted Canary.
Ted Canary, and there's another one.
Yeah, and then our female human bard, Taco Bella.
Taco Bella.
That's my power team. Been getting it done.
Damn.
that is the Nintendo power team in a nutshell right there. I'm a fan. I am a fan of that masterclass naming, sir.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, man.
Of course. Thank you for entertaining us with your clever names.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Cryogear, developed and published by Polarity Flow and Adrian Zing. Released April 17th on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99, previously available on the Switch as well. Cryogear is a unique Metroidvania inspired by pixel art platformers, set in an open sci-fi world and driven by rewarded exploration. Control the reprogrammed clone G34R as he discovers the world, learns new abilities, and unveils the mystery of the Emperor AI. Purnell, tell us about Cryogear.
So Cryogear is pretty much a platform exploration game. And in a sense, originally, it grew on me as I played more of it, because I got to say, I'll explain why. It'll make more sense if I actually get into the game proper. So, like I said, it's a Metroidvania style game or platform exploration where your character goes between various environments with the intent being to connect or activate as many or all of uplink terminals as he possibly can. So, for example, each area typically has like four uplink setups and then multiple exits from that area. When you enter a location, there are enemies all over the place that you pretty much have to attack, and I'll explain a little bit more about that shortly. But essentially, you attack enemies and look for these uplink terminals, and once you have access and set up enough of them, you are able to traverse to the next areas that are connected to the place that you're currently at. Now, combat as a whole in the game, however, is done by way of using four different weapons, being a lance, charger, and actually the blaster. Essentially, it's just four different guns that you can, three different guns, and then your crowbar. I call it the crowbar. It's actually a melee weapon, but it looks like a freaking crowbar. Now, as you're moving around the game, unlike typical games of this style, you don't find new weapons as you traverse the environments in chests and whatnot. Instead, what you typically find are chests that contain resources. And those various resources are then used on like a rudimentary crafting screen in your inventory to create new stuff. So, for example, if you get enough of three different things, you can upgrade. You start out, you can use it to create the melee weapon. But then once you unlock the melee weapon second level, you can then use the next level amount of resources to craft the level 2 version of the melee weapon. Same for the blaster, lance, and the charger weapons. Now, also, in addition to like I mentioned earlier, you don't get new weapons from chests, but from the resources. You're also barred from new weapons until you get them by accessing use of the skill tree. So as you level up your character, because leveling up your character in this game is done kind of like Dark Souls-esque. When you defeat enemies, you get currency. And if you get enough to level up your character, when you get to a terminal that you've accessed and unlocked, you can then use that terminal to spend the resources to upgrade your character in a variety of categories. So there's hit point boosting, basic categories. Like, it's hard to even tell because I can't look from the darn main menu. I should have wrote them down. But there's this four categories you can level up the character in. And each of those categories, in addition, also boosts your attack power with those various weapons. But you also earn skill points from leveling up. And those skill points are applied to four different trees related to the different weapons, in addition to just basic mobility. So as you go through those various skill trees, say, for example, you are a big fan of the blaster type weapon. as you spend your skill points on the blaster tree, you'll get various things such as, you know, bullet speed increases, accuracy increases, and then there's also, you can upgrade various aspects of your character. Like, there's like drones you can build with the crafting that I mentioned earlier, and you can build up their durability and strength. But as you're going through those trees, you'll also eventually come across crafting blueprints for the higher level versions of those weapons. And once you've unlocked those blueprints using skill points, you can then use the actual resources you've acquired to ultimately build the product itself. Now, originally I thought I wouldn't like the game a ton because I'm a very picky guy, and I was concerned about the fact that I wouldn't care because I would be unhappy that I can't, you know, look around and find cool new weapons and customize my weapon. Like, I want to use the gray lance, not the, you know, the yellow lance, just using stupid names there. But what ended up happening was I didn't care. I ended up enjoying the exploration of the environments to find the uplink terminals and get to the new areas to hear more music and see what new robots were going to exist in the different environments. Because the art that they use to craft the dystopian environment that you're in is actually pretty cool. Like when I first booted the game up, I started using the main character, and again, you start with the crowbar, and he has this kind of swing where he's kind of like holding it with one hand and then holding the top with his other hand. He's like letting it go and swinging it out front. But looking at it, I was like, you know, I'm not really feeling the image here, the graphics or anything. But again, as I played more, it all kind of clicked for me, and I enjoyed it a lot more. So eventually, I just kind of got in the habit of saying, okay, I just want to see what's next, what's going, what's in this door. I need to unlock the next terminal so I can unlock and go in this next zone. And some of the enemies that pop up in the game are real jerkbags, too. Like, there's a door I found, like, where I went into the door, and when I opened it, it teleported me to a room where a guy with a Gatling gun was just spraying me. Like, it wasn't a cheap transition. It was more of a, yo, dude, here's something that's happened. You better react to this fast. And I was not reacting, and it killed me. But it was a very cool thing to come across. And then I came back, of course, later and mopped the floor with the stupid jerk because I knew what to do. But I found myself enjoying the exploration. I enjoy using unlocking the new skill tree perks, and honestly just enjoying the vibe of the game. And the music is very cool. It's very good music for this game. Quite frankly, I want to say I had complaints, but I honestly kind of don't. It does what it wants to do. It does it well. Like I said, at best, I just wish there was more weapon variety amongst the different weapon types themselves, but it keeps it simple that way, you know? You got four weapons, they get stronger. Okay, that's great. And I'm fine with that, too. Pretty much, there we go. Vitality, strength, intelligence, and agility. There we go. And I'm not quite sure what the agility truly does, because I didn't really notice myself getting faster or anything. I was just friggin' moving. but it's there. It's a stat. And it does build up your energy meter, so there you go. Because, like, you know, those style stole games and all, your attacks, also your melee attacks, actually drain your, like, your stamina gauge, too. So building that up isn't a bad thing. And then when you use guns, they have ammo that ultimately refills once you let it run out. Like, so you don't have to, like, collect bullets in the game. They just refill. The gun reloads based on your reload speed of the weapon. So, but I'll stop rambling because I could do this all freaking day.
We know.
All right, hey, you're not supposed to agree with me. You're supposed to say no, Purnell. You are a man of words of value that don't... Ah, screw it.
Do you want me to lie to you?
Yes! I want comforts. I want creature comforts. Comfort through lies.
How about you comfort us by telling us if this game is worth $20?
I would say it actually is. If you're looking for a Metroidvania style or a platform adventure game that's less about constantly switching your equipment and more about just playing and exploring an environment, I would say this is up your alley.
Cool. I didn't know if you had more to say there or not.
It's warm. I wish it was warm. It's windy as balls out right now.
It has been windy. We had some really bad wind the other day, and it ripped the gutter off the side of our house.
Oof.
So whenever our stimulus check actually comes in, any plans I had for a PC are out the window because we got to get the fucking roof and gutters repaired.
I mean, it sucks, but you got to admit, at least the stimulus check will be covering that and not, well, I guess we're putting away the money for, you know, that really cool pizza party we were planning because we got
pizza party. We're definitely going to have a pizza party. When all this shit is done, I'm having a big pizza party and everybody's invited.
I want to come too.
You better promise that now, because once it happens, you can't take it back. And yeah, I want
you better show up, Cole.
That's going to be a lot of pizza.
I can understand if Chris doesn't make it because he's in fucking Texas, but.
Look, if I can make it from Kentucky.
No, he can make it from Texas.
Right.
Texas is significantly further than Kentucky.
I mean, that doesn't matter. It's both south. Sailing.
From Austin, it takes 6 hours to get out of Texas in any direction. Because we're right in the center.
It's interesting.
But, and that's just to get out of there.
That's like crazy because I'm in West Virginia in 45 minutes.
Hey, I've driven myself to MAGFest back and forth like a couple of times now. I mean,
you have no excuse.
I ask excuse because I wouldn't, you'd have to convince me that every freaking time. Like, there's something to be said about where you live compared to where we live because we're so connected to other states that the thought of being told I have to drive 6 hours in any direction just to leave my state does not gel with me.
Aren't you in Delaware? That's the smallest state, isn't it? Or is it Rhode Island?
Rhode Island, I think.
I can drive 10 minutes. In 10 minutes, I can get to 3 different states.
I couldn't believe it the first time me and the family, because we used to live in Massachusetts, and when we moved to Texas, I was really interested in Rhode Island, and so I asked my dad to tell me when we were in Rhode Island. He said, we're in Rhode Island. I was like, yay. 20 minutes later, well, we're out of Rhode Island.
That was fast. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. We got one last game to talk about for the party cast, and that is Blind Men, developed by Maneater Games, published by Rattleaka Games, released April 14th on PS4 and Vita, 15th on Xbox One, 17th on the Switch, all for $4.99. As the nephew of a retired supervillain, there's nothing Keegan wants more than to become one himself. And what better way than to join the League of Evil? All he needs to do is commit a crime to complete his application. Unfortunately, Keegan soon finds himself in more trouble than he could ever have imagined when his plans are interrupted by a couple of spies from opposing agencies. Chris, what's going on in Blind Men?
Like, kind of a real burying the lead when it comes to that description. So, Blind Men is a visual novel created by Maneater Games, whose logo should let you know right away what's coming up.
It's very not safe for work.
Yeah, yeah. Which
I was surprised that logo got okayed.
It's a very sultry logo of a naked dude. Licking, well, I guess a demon man kind of thing, licking a lollipop.
Yeah. Very suggestive. He ain't got no pants on.
It's true. And, the bottom part of the logo is, just covering up the gets kicked off of the consoles.
Oh, that is an interesting logo. All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as soon as that popped up, I was like, oh, okay, I think I know what I'm in for. And sure enough, this is a boy love visual novel. It claims that it's a spy parody, but I'm not really seeing that in much of it. So, yes, you do play as this just out of high school super villain in the making. He looks like a teenaged Tommy Wiseau with an eye patch. And he's trying to get into the family business of supervillainy instead of going to college, which is, of course, the struggle of every young man, approaching that age. And, basically he's trying to apply for the supervillain, the League of Evil or whatever that is. And so, of course, to pad out the application and, he needs a little bit of evil experience. So you go to a fancy party where they're showing off a diamond and you get to choose. You meet two other characters. They're the only two love interest slash other people in the game that aren't, really tertiary to the plot. So you meet these two agents and then you get to decide whether you want to steal the diamond or whether you want to kidnap a scientist. Which that causes the story to branch off in two completely extreme ways. And then in each of these branches, you can kind of tilt the story towards getting to know the, I forget what their global is the MI6 / CIA type organization to which Hunter belongs, who is a randy young man, a very Austin Powers but without the color kind of character, very flamboyant,
randy,
very randy, yes. That was completely unrelated to the review. I actually was choking on coffee. Horny mites. Wow. I did. Yeah, I wasn't doing that for an effect. anyways, you could also go for the more strong silent type, Sergei, the Russian, what do they call it, KGB agent. And so, you know, you kind of tilt the story in either direction, and you can get a couple of different endings with these characters. You know, each one unlocks a different illustration, typically of boys kissing. And the whole, like, content of it is very modest, which, you know, we were talking about in chat just now. And no, you don't get to name any characters. Dark Mika was asking if you get to name any characters. But no, like, the whole thing plays out very modestly, and it's very tame, I would say. Like I said, you basically collect pictures of boys kissing, and that's about it. The interest. So as far as, like, being an actual visual novel, the options are such that, like, you can actually, if you go through and read a story and then you, like, want to make one decision, like, there's only about four or five decisions you would make in any storyline, to get to the end, ... Cause that's always what they, always what they put at the end. So, like, you either make, like, four or five decisions. So if you decide you want to redo a decision, you can actually skip all of the story you've seen up to that point and then choose the different decision. And then at that point, you can, you know, let it play out, and then, you know, once it gets back into territory that you've already seen, you can skip that. Or you can toggle it where you can skip everything. And since this is a Rattle-like game, it's got, you know, easy achievements, you can actually just set it to skip the entire story and just sit there and choose, like, every option until you get all the trophies. There's about...
Nice.
Yeah, there's two... For each of the story branches where you decide what crime you're going to commit, there's four trophies to be had. It's two for if you choose Hunter, and two for if you choose Sergei. And, you know, and then there's one for if you do one, you know, either one of their story branches at all. And then, you know, of course, the one for if you get all the ending or all of the endings, which I believe that they said there is 15... Yeah, there's 12 different endings, which can amount to 15 unique illustrations.
Of boys kissing.
Of boys kissing, mostly. Some of them aren't. Some of them are boys tied up in chairs. But, you know, because spy stuff. So, you know, as far as the content of the story goes, I would say it's cute. It's a cute story. It's not very funny. It doesn't have a lot of spy, like, satire in it that was promised. It's kind of a straightforward story, and most of it is just, like, you know, Keegan or Dr. Cyclops, because of his eye patch, you know. Just kind of, he chose the name for himself, I don't know. It's just more or less him, like, you know, describing the scene and, like, you know, just kind of working through things. Like, none of it really, you know... You don't ever get to see this League of Evil. It's represented by one lady who shows up in the story sometimes. She is the only female character in the entire game. And, you know, sometimes his uncle shows up. That's about it. Each storyline, without skipping any bits, takes about 20 to 25 minutes to get through. So it's really a very succinct, like, little compact story.
It's Rattle-like, so it's quick, it's easy Rattle-like achievements, it's $5. What do you think?
Well, if this is your kind of content, then I don't know. I don't know really how to suggest it, because, like I said, you know, Dark Mika is our resident visual novel, you know, kind of person who looks for this sort of stuff. And, you know, I've already disappointed her by saying that it's modest and pretty tame. So it's for if you just want a cute story about, you know, boys getting into situations and possibly ending up kissing. That's in there. If you are looking for a spy novel, as it were, represented in visual novel format, it's relatively unsatisfying. So I'm going to give it a try it. But, you know, it wasn't bad. I read, like, most of it.
If you're a Republican, this is an absolute must buy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we can be safe in doubting that there are any Republicans that listen to this show anymore.
If there ever were any.
Look, Republicans love espionage, so.
That is true. They're listening to us for the memes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, I mean, if it's for the memes, it makes perfect sense.
So that they know how to make the cool memes that are hip with the kids today. They want to be down with the sickness.
Oh, God. Now they're going to be like, you know, I was listening to it for that, but not anymore. Oh, Jesus.
What is wrong with this show?
I'm at the grocery store with my kid, which I don't get to do anymore, obviously, because the Ronas. But I like to do that when I'm at the grocery store. Like, I use horrible lingo just to, like, embarrass the shit out of number one. Just so she knows that, you know, I love her. But she questions it. Just so she questions it.
A parent that doesn't embarrass their child is not parenting enough. You gotta embarrass them more.
The best time that it happened was when I was checking out, and we were actually in the town that she goes to school in, because we normally go to a different county that's closer.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in the town she goes to school in, and one of the little fellas, the cashier, was like, recognized her and was chatting her up, and I'm just like blowing out all this ridiculous low key lit AF fam. She was just gonna die. I thought she was gonna before we got out of that store. She hated me so bad.
Is this the boy you were telling me about? Yeah, he is lit AF.
She was like, I hate you. Every time I said something, she'd look at me and just stare.
No, that's ace parenting as far as I'm concerned. I like that. I love hearing stories of parents embarrassing their kids. It's just the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is it for us. Still got a little bit more show to go with Tim, so I'm going to let all of y'all get going. Anybody have any final words before we move on?
Wrap a lap on Deuce Timer.
And finally, we are bringing in Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Great.
How's life treating you these days?
It's all right. It's okay. What? It's only been like a couple weeks. I was on the show last week.
Man, I know, but, you know, a week is a lifetime anymore.
It is a lifetime, but it's also a lifetime where nothing really happens inside of my house. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, the only thing that matters is that you're still here, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, people will no doubt hear my child playing in the background as we record this, since I'm trying to slip in an afternoon recording while he's over there playing with blocks.
It's just part of the charm.
It's part of the charm. It's part of Richard. Oh my God, dude. Yeah. It's part of everyone working and podcasting from their homes whenever they possibly can at this point. Okay, Richard, seriously? You gotta zip it or we gotta go back upstairs, bud. What? Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why I just said you just gotta be quiet for a little bit. Dad's gotta talk about video games. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Video games.
So you can expect from this segment of the podcast.
Well, should we dive right into things then?
Let's dive right in. We could dive right into a sunless sea. Oh, man. Transition. You probably had the other
man.
First.
No, right no. You are right on the money. First game to talk about with you is called Sunless Sea Submariner Edition, developed by Fail Better Games and Nephilim Game Studios, published by Digirati, released April 23rd on the Switch, April 24th on Xbox One for $19.99. Take the helm of your steamship in a Victorian Gothic role-playing game of discovery, loneliness, and frequent death. Find your father's bones, determine London's destiny, defy the gods of the deep sea. Tim, tell us about Sunless Sea.
Ah, yes, the sea. This game likes to attach Z's to the beginning of words, much like Mortal Kombat does with its K sounds. everything is the Z, which is kind of tough to get used to off the bat when you're like, because this game is, I would say, not beginner friendly by design. Like, it's kind of out to get you, and it's like a little harsh, and there's like a lot going on. So like, when you're trying to process that and also process the language, which involves a lot of words that are not spelled correctly as part of its quote unquote charm, it is part of the charm. I don't know. It can be rough. So yeah, Sunless Sea. This is a interesting thing. It's set in, yeah, like a Victorian turn of the century. Well, I guess turn of the 20th century, England, where there is a sea below the surface of the sea, where, you know, it is underground. The overground overworld, I guess, still does exist. You can go there if you have enough resources. That is a possibility at a certain point. But yeah, otherwise you are in this mysterious, you know, pitch black underground sea, and you are a sea captain. Yeah, whenever you start a run, this game is somewhat okay, but no, that's just, you probably can't hear him, but he's just like running around making like whishy noises with bubbles from the it's just distracting. Yeah. So yeah, you are a sea captain. The game is run based. At the beginning of your run, you get to choose like a background for your character. You get to choose like a goal for your character, an end objective, which is really cool and instantly gives the game like a decent amount of a good amount of replay value, just beyond it being kind of run based and there being like a lot of random shit that can happen to you along the way. Is there will be different goals, like finding your father's bones or just becoming a great explorer, or I mean, really, you can just become rich and retire at a certain point in the game, and perhaps and which the game considers a draw, which is fine. That's cool. Whatever. I like it. So what you'll do is you get a ship and you will go out and sail this sea. Now, the out there in the sea, there is a number of different islands, and the layout changes on every run. So like with every captain, kind of the islands will shift around, though they are like generally in a same ish position, but never like not the exact same arrangement. So that is a way in which the game becomes roguelike-ish. That is where things get randomized. Though when I was kind of reading around about the game, supposedly there's a way to like keep the map the same, like I'll get into that a bit. There is ways where when you transition from one captain to the next, you can lock some things in, and I'll get into that. So basically what you sail around, you go to different ports, and different ports will have different options, different shops, different stories and quests to explore, and the game is super weird with like some of the stuff that's out there. It's all, you know, very dark. Haunting is a good word to describe like the game just in general, from the presentation to the music to like the locales and characters you are encountering. It is definitely mystical, magical. Like there is an island of men of clay. There's an island that is run by apes. There is there's one island I'm particularly fond of, where when you come up to it, there is an ongoing conflict between a group of a society of guinea pigs and a society of rats. And you are challenged with resolving this conflict one way or another, which I find particularly amusing, because if you try to barter for peace, they just laugh at you and they're like, oh, thank you, large human person with your large human brain, like we couldn't think of that, thanks a lot. So that's cool. So yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff out there. There are sea monsters out at sea, there are pirates out at sea, there are... Richard, you're being too loud. Yeah. Oh. And so you'll go out, you'll go to these different ports, and I'll tell you now as a hot pro tip. So like my first run, like I was so fucking lost, and I just like ran out of fuel and my crew starved to death like very quickly. Like I just had no idea, like how do I get money? How do I do things? Like the main first thread you should be doing is kind of working for the Admiralty in Fallen London. Fallen London is like your hub base. It's like London, but it fell. And just by like going to different ports and compiling reports on them, they will give you money when you go back. But you kind of need to get a feel of like there's a lot of management to this game. You have to manage the aforementioned fuel. You have to manage the supplies on your ship. You have to hire crew. You will want to staff officers, and you takes time and money and thinking and resources to do that. Like, the sea is a very large place, and you need to be able to plan for how many supplies and how much fuel you're going to need to make the run that you want to go on. So you'll kind of make smaller loops first, like, okay, I'm going to go out just like to a few aisles and then back. And then you can start thinking like, okay, like I made one run, like I was out there for like a couple hours, like going around to different islands and exploring all over the place. And yeah, but that's like once I got a feel of like how long things are going to last me and where I can stop to refuel for a good price. So, yeah, that's stuff that you need to keep in mind. Shh, buddy, you gotta be quiet. You're being too crazy. Yeah, you can have water. The management sim of my child. You can end up having a child in the game at some point. Transition. Yeah, I can see you. Look, you're just ramping up again. What? Yeah, so there's all that for managing and running your ship. There is sea combat. You will, once you get enough money. That was another thing. When I first started this game, and you start out with, like, I don't know, like, less than 100 currency, and I was just like, how am I ever going to afford to do anything? Like, this seems ridiculous. But, you know, again, as you get a feel for the game, as you start figuring out, like, ways to get a lot of money, and it starts to pile up eventually. Now, islands, as you go to them, like sometimes quests and even stuff at London will not be unlocked right away. But a nice thing about the game is it will tell you like what items or what information you need to unlock that quest. A lot of the currencies in this game are just like less information from like, oh, you have news because you read the newspaper, or you have a Z story. from some adventure you had on an island that you can share with somebody, and then, you know, they might provide you with lodging or something like that.
I just want to say I appreciate your dedication to the bit with the voice acting.
Trying, I'm helping. You know, there are tales of terror that you'll find if you have like some crazy screwed up thing that happens to you, and like all this stuff comes into play. Like there's a ton of different resources out there. Like again, Zissi, it is a huge place, a very large, diverse place. And even after playing for a few hours, you might really only be scratching the surface of what you can find and do out there. But you know, you will pick up passengers that want to go from this place to another. One of the more annoying things, but it's kind of like part of how the game works, is when you'll pick up a quest, say in London, and they'll be like, okay, well, you need to take a crate to, or go get a strategic information from this island. And guess what? You have not found that island yet. And they might give you some vague directions like, oh, it's off to the east. You know what? Literally everything in the game is off to the east from London because it's on the west side of the map. What's wrong, bud? Oh, did you hurt yourself from running around and acting crazy?
Oh, but no. There's wrestlers out there.
There's wrestlers out there?
Yeah, I'm pretending.
Oh. Okay, bud. Shh, bud. Shh. Pretend like you're in an empty performance center and you can't hear anything. So
this is wrestling.
Yeah, so you have to figure out, you know, you have to... That's why I was out in the sea for like a couple hours yesterday. I was like trying to find one little island and I was just like all over the place. Like, where is this fucking thing? And it was on like some tiny little black portion of the map between two places that I was just like, oh, I'm not going to go over that. There's no island there. It wouldn't possibly fit. No, it fit. But inevitably, your early runs are going to come to a bitter end. Like I said, my first run, everyone starved to death. My second run, I think I got stabbed. Yeah, I got murdered. There was a guy who I had been working with, a shady looking man in London, who commissioned me to go retrieve a box from a far off island and paid me. Well, I thought he was paying me up front. It turns out he was giving me the money to give to the person for the box of souls. I didn't read that. That's my fault that I didn't realize he was giving me the money to exchange for the goods. So when I got to said island, I didn't have the money. And I was like, oh, oh no, that's not good. And he was like, he warned me before I left, do not return to London without it or else. And I'm like, but I got into a position where it's like, well, I have to stop to get more fuel or more food, or I'm not going to make it. You know, I can turn in my port reports. I'll get enough money. I'm good for it, man. I'm good for it. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I can get in there and get out and not deal with it. But no, first I hit the landing. Him and his thugs came up and they're like, hey, yo, where's the box? And I'm like, I don't got a box. And they're like, okay, so where's the money plus interest? And I'm like, okay, I don't have the money plus interest. They're like, okay, well, we're going to fight you. And I failed the, it was an iron challenge. You have a few stats here, Captain Ironheart's mirrors, which has to do with light. I figured out, because you need mirrors to reflect light around so you can see in the dark sea. veils, which is like subterfuge, and I think there's another one. But yeah, I failed the Iron Challenge, and me and my whole crew were murdered, and yeah, I died.
That was that run.
That was that run. Well, apparently one guy didn't die, because the next run started out with like, oh, this was a person who was who had worked under you, so maybe it was a guy who worked under me, and then, I don't know, was not on the boat when we all got murdered. So he was able to inherit some of my stats. And, I chose one that involved him getting half my money because I happened to have a ton of money on me at the time. So I was able to carry over some of that stuff to the next run. So I wasn't starting from nothing in that case, which is cool. I already had a decent amount of money to start getting fuel and, supplies together and start off on the right foot. But yeah, like the more you work, the more money you make. You can eventually pass down a lot more to future captains when you retire. And yeah, there's just like a lot to do with the game. There's a lot to explore. There's lots of different quests to interact with. Like, you know, some, not everything is going to be available on every quest or on every run. Some things are going to depend on your mirror stats or veil stats or hearts or whatever those challenges are. And you may or may not be able to do those things. There's different officers to recruit. Just lots of different stuff to do. And like the different end goals are something that's, you know, really appealing for making different runs stand out. To touch on at least, the title of the game is The Submariner Edition. And that refers to this expansion content where you can turn your ship into a submarine in order to go explore underwater. That is not something you can do early in the game. I haven't found that yet, but what you end up being able to do is you turn your ship into a submarine, and there are certain quests in the world that require you to be able to be a submarine to explore underwater, which it tells you. It goes like, oh, you need to have a submarine. Well, I do not have a submarine, so I cannot do this. And the game does tell you up front, like, well, this is, it kind of gives you a hint, like, okay, well, this is where you need to go to move down the submarine path. So it doesn't hide it from you. Perhaps a more experienced Sunless Sea veteran than I could figure it out and get into their sub much earlier than I did, but I'm still working on finding it.
Well, overall, it sounds like you really enjoyed the game. So $20 on it. What do you think?
I did really enjoy the game, and I think it's definitely worth checking out. It's harsh up front. But you know, the company is literally called Fail Better. They have an expectation that you are going to do a better job of screwing it up, on future runs. Like, kind of the only caveat is that the current state of our real world is kind of filled with dread. So if you don't want more dread, then maybe you shouldn't pick up Sunless Sea right now. But it's a game I've kind of had like on my radar for a while, because I heard it was pretty cool, and it definitely delivered. Just like great writing, great atmosphere, and constantly interesting. Richard, where are you going? Richard? Yeah. Hedgehog. Sorry, I have, at all costs, I have to keep him from going upstairs and bugging my wife, who's working upstairs. But yeah, Sunless Sea is great.
All right, one final game to talk about this episode is called Archaica, The Path of Light, developed by Two Mammoths, published by Dragius Games, released April 24th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Manipulate artifacts from an ancient civilization to solve challenging puzzles. As the Lightbearer, your quest is to walk the legendary Path of Light and explore an ancient and beautiful world. Tim, what is this game? And the title properly?
I don't know. It's a puzzle game. It's a puzzle game. Like if you've played a 3D Zelda game, or perhaps an Uncharted, or perhaps a Tomb Raider, and you remember a puzzle where there is a beam of light coming into a tomb, or dungeon, or what have you, and you have to reflect it around with mirrors to activate, let's say, a gem set into a statue, or a crystal set into a pedestal. Does this sound familiar?
Yes.
I think, yeah, it's that. That's what you're doing. It takes place from like an overhead three-quarters perspective, so you know you're not like boots on the ground pushing and pulling things around. But that's the gist of what you are doing in this game. It is a laser puzzle game. So you go into these kind of discrete rooms, and you have to activate these crystals, and then a portal will power up, and then you can move on to the next level. So on each level, along with kind of, you know, you'll have, for completing the puzzle, so you'll have there's a variety of stuff. You have mirrors, go figure. You have mirrors, there's a couple different types of mirrors. Well, there's a few different types of mirrors, but there's like one, it's like, this shoots off the beam at a 90 degree angle. So it's like, okay, here it takes a solid right turn, goes that way. There are mirrors that will hit them off at like a 45 degree angle instead. There are objects where it's like if you shoot the laser into the back of it, it will shoot it off in two directions at once out the other end. There's other things that will increase. So apparently if you this wasn't explained, but, you know, I figured it out, is if you bounce a laser around a little bit too much, it won't have as much power coming out of one of those splitter mirror things. So there are a laser amplifier. So it's like, okay, I need to bounce around this laser, put it through the amplifier, and then it goes into the back of the splitter thing, and then the splitter thing will have full power, and that will be able to reach the two crystals, and then I'll solve the puzzle, and woo! move on to the next level. So you can... There will be, a certain number of square, like there's a grid basically laid out, and you can freely move the pieces around. You can like literally, you're not like slide puzzling them around. It's literally like, okay, I'm going to pick up this piece from over here and I can drop it over here. And if you select two pieces at the same time, it just swaps them. So yeah, there's not like a lot of like, oh, I have to figure out just how I'm going to push them around and move this out of the way so I can move this one over there. That's not this game. You're just nope, pick it up, move it where you want it to. Good. Done. Boom. On each level, there will be like these glyphs that light up that kind of like blink. And there's three of them. I think it's usually three. I think I'm pretty sure it's always three hidden around. And if you click on them, you will get a little bit of lore. Click, I should say, if you button on them, if you press on them, you get like a lore piece. And there's also these little like white crystal shards, and you can collect, and these are not hard to find, I should say. Like, usually they are obvious, or if you just like like pull the camera slightly off the side of the puzzle area, like they're usually off there. They're not hard to find, they're not like super well hidden or anything like that. You just gotta put the slightest amount of effort into finding these things, which is good because it makes it feel like you always accomplish something right when you start a level. But you pick up these crystals, and those give you a certain number of hints. And what you do to get a hint, the way the hints work, is you will pick a block, and it will highlight on that block and the eight surrounding blocks, so basically a 3x3 square. If any of those light up with a circle, then you know that one of the mirror objects has to go on that space. It doesn't tell you which one, it just tells you one of them does. So you can start narrowing down where you need to place things if you start getting stuck. And even if you burn through all of your clues, like your first two or three clues or whatever, the meter will just passively fill up while you're sitting there messing around fiddling with the level. So eventually you can get hints on every single square and level, so you will know exactly where you need to put pieces, which makes it very possible to move forward. Even if at a certain point you're just sitting there guessing, being like, you know, just swapping around the pieces on these circles, being like, okay, well, I'm completely stumped. I've sat here and waited out, so I have all the hints I could possibly have. I know where everything needs to go. Then you can just start trialing your trial trialing and error.
Close enough.
Trialing and erroring your way through the level in order. You can just brute force that shit to get to the other side, which doesn't sound glamorous, but what does it do? It gets you to the other side, which I appreciate. The game has a decent amount of levels, and some levels have like multiple areas to them. So there's that. And I like it because you keep moving forward. Basically, just like the hint system means you're not really going to get stuck on one puzzle for too long, unless you're an absolute like purist and you're like, no, I'm not touching the hint button for any means. But if you're not one of those people and you just want to, you know, you want to move through, see the puzzles, just be like, ah, fuck this puzzle, I can't figure it out, I just want to move on. You will eventually get through. You can move on and be like, oh, okay, well, this one I figured out on my own. That last puzzle can eat it. That's fine. That's good. As you move along, like, there's kind of like an introductory tier of puzzles, and then you move on to like themed areas. It's all like framed on like this ancient stone tablet thing where it's like you work your way around the base ring, and then like these big like tablets come up vertically on it, and you do each one of those. So, you know, it goes through your like different, you know, elemental backdrop things, the jungle and the desert and whatnot. And they will start to fold in new mechanics and new objects and new things you need to consider. One that's especially fun is when it starts giving you like different colored stuff, like, oh, here's blue and red lasers. So you have to hit like blue and red crystals with them, but then it also will throw in purple crystals. So you have to know your color combos, and do it. So like if you shoot like that one mirror object I was talking about where it's like you put a laser in the back and then it shoots out two in other directions. If you hit the back of that thing with multiple lasers. So if you hit it with a blue and a red, it will shoot out purple in the other two. That is a necessary solution to at least one puzzle. Can send me a nickel for that one. So yeah, it's a pretty chill game. That's basically what's going on with it. It's laser puzzles. I have a particular affinity, I guess, for this style of puzzle. I don't know why. I just always have. I just think it's cool. Maybe shooting lasers around. Maybe that's what it is. Just childhood enjoyment of lasers. But it does that. It you know, it's got a nice, clean presentation. It's, you know, really easy to control and see around the level. It has a generous enough hint system that you're going to get through it without feeling like too much of a dumbass. And even if you have to trial and err your way through, you can still feel somewhat good about getting through things. So it ain't bad.
Awesome. So overall, $15. What do you think?
Yeah, it's not quite as, yeah, I would recommend it. It's not quite as emphatic a recommendation as Sunless Sea, but it's a pretty cool, well-made puzzle game to kind of occupy your time.
I will have to give this one a go myself. It's cool to see Dragius bringing some stuff to Xbox and PlayStation now, too. Yeah. They've been pretty much Switch only up to now.
Well, good. I'm glad they're getting more platforms. I'm glad they figured out the business to getting their games on more platforms.
Indeed. It's good to see all games on all platforms.
Mm-hmm. Best case scenario for us, the consumer.
Indeed. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Tim, thanks for being here. Thanks to everyone else who is on doing their thing. Music, we're going to listen to a little bit more of Robo Rob from his Final Fantasy VII album, which is fantastic.
Oh, man. Final Fantasy VII. Oh, boy.
Have you been playing it?
I have. I've been playing the remake.
I'm like, I don't know. I guess I'm a little over halfway through at this point, I think. That game has got some fantastic music. Aside from just being generally what seems to be an incredibly good video game, like, the music is just unbelievable. It is so good.
Yeah, I need to get the soundtrack for that.
Yeah, that eight disc soundtrack or whatever it is, it's like $80.
Jesus, really?
Yeah, it's a huge soundtrack. I mean, that's part of like what is just so astonishing to me is like, you know, it's quantity and its quality, like just like the number of arrangements, and it's a massive amount of music. I am not shocked that it is such a huge soundtrack, but I at least have the sampler that came with the deluxe edition.
Yeah, it's a pretty, pretty good soundtrack. So
yeah, pretty good game and a pretty game.
Yeah, and Robo Rob, you could get his electronic remix album now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, right now, don't even got to wait. Probably cheaper than $80, I'd bet.
It is. It is. Significantly.
Significantly.